This is my journey, inspired one story at a time. A library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created to listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, and today's guest is Mark Anderson. Mark is just a really great guy, someone who has a big heart and just is a relationship builder. He runs an amazing practice in the Utah, Idaho, Montana region of the country called Mountain Land Rehab. I think you're really going to enjoy the interview, going to see how he started with one small clinic in Park City, Utah, and over the years grew it into a very big rehab company that is admired by many throughout the nation. Mark is just a great guy, gives back to the community, is very involved in mission work. You'll hear about his travels to Iraq and other places to help those in need. And he's just one of those caring guys that is just fun to be around. Mark is a very well-liked person throughout the country in the physical therapy world, and someone who is greatly admired for what he's been able to build. And the people that are around him in his company just really speak to his great credibility and his great skill of being a leader, developing teams, bringing people together to form what can be done better with a group as opposed to any individual. So he's a great example for us all. And he was honored by his peers by receiving the Robert G. Dicus Service Award through the private practice section, which is a very coveted award that is given to people that really reach out and go further than most to provide service to their colleagues and fellow physical therapists. So enjoy this program. I think you're really going to like it. Mark's just, as I said before, just a great guy, someone who I've known for a long time and really appreciated, and has shared a lot with me, and I've learned a lot from. So enjoy the program, and here we go with Mark Anderson. Mark, welcome to the program. So great to have you.
Great to be here.
So fill us in a little bit about Mountain Land's history. You're the CEO of Mountain Land Rehab. It's based in Salt Lake City, and you've been there a long time. So just give us a little bit of history and where you're at now.
Yeah, I guess the basis of the company started in 1984 when I opened up a little outpatient clinic out of an old house in Park City, Utah. That's kind of the roots of our company. And from there, we started growing. Had a couple of other outpatient clinics, started doing some skilled nursing contracts, some hospital contracts, and kind of the rest is history.
So why not just stay in Park City, ski in the morning, treat patients in the afternoon, happy life? Wasn't enough for you?
I think, you know, probably there was a drive to grow. And I remember somebody that I respected always talked about, if you're not growing, you're dying. And so I was just driven to continue to grow the business. And I feel like I was never satisfied, and maybe part of that was that I always felt like I could lose something real easily, so I needed to continue to grow. So when we did lose things, we would be able to continue to survive.
Yeah,
well, it was maybe a survival mode.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So how many clinics and contracts do you have currently?
Today, I think we have 38 outpatient clinics. We've got two or three skilled nursing facilities that we provide services in, and two or three hospitals.
So obviously it's been a good run. You've grown well. What's it been like managing through COVID? We're recording this in early September 2020, kind of still in the thick of it, 6 months after we first discovered this thing. So how are you guys doing?
You know, I think we've taken COVID seriously. What I've really learned to appreciate is everybody is on a different page with COVID. Looking at where you live, the community that you're in, the people that have been impacted by it really gives you a different perspective. And so we started out, and I remember well that I think it was March 18th that we had our first case in Utah. We'd had some cases in Montana a little bit earlier, and Idaho, I think, the week before. But in all three states that we practice, we immediately started to see a decrease in patients, and we started to react to that. It was, different clinics saw different changes in their caseloads. Some clinics had very little change, and others had dramatic decreases. And so we had to react based on, the impact of the particular clinics.
So when you're running a multi-state, multi-facility business like that, and it's based out of Salt Lake City, where your administration headquarters are, do you deal with each individual site, or do you do a company-wide mandate, this is how we're going to handle this?
Well, what we began with is trying to look at each state and the regulations that each state was imposing. But we quickly moved to the CDC standards. So even if the CDC standards were a little bit more strict than a particular state or community were requiring, we decided as a company that we were going to stand behind the CDC guidelines. And that's what we've done probably since April.
And so you've done well. You haven't had too much outbreak in staff or patients that you've had to manage?
Yeah, we've had minimal impact. We've had a couple of staff and therapists that have had tested positive for COVID because we've been using masks with all of our staff and patients. We've been able to minimize our quarantine. We take temperatures of every individual, including staff, in the morning when they come in and patients. So it's been a situation where I feel like we've weathered this well. We're certainly not back to, full speed. We're probably as a company at about 90% of where we were last year. But we continue to see slow increases each month, and we feel like we've been able to weather it and will continue to.
Yeah, it's really an interesting scenario when you think of the United States being as diverse as it is. And you look at the COVID virus impact, and you have all kinds of states that, didn't start out having much of an issue. And other places like Seattle and New York and New Jersey had huge impact. You look at how the government, responded to it, and sometimes I wonder, someone like yourself was in an area that wasn't highly impacted. And if we've learned anything, I wonder if we've gone back to maybe nationally we should have locked everything down for 6 to 8 weeks and really had people stay at home and really do that, even if it didn't affect you in your own area. But yet, I'm just curious how you would look at that being in an area that wasn't that affected.
Yeah, it's easy to have hindsight, but obviously, if we'd have been more aggressive at really putting limitations down and social distancing and wearing masks earlier, we probably would have seen a considerably less impact. Interesting enough, we still can go into different areas in the communities we work, and you'll go to some locations and nobody wears masks, and you'll go into other locations and you don't see anybody without masks. And it's not necessarily just because of mandates in the community. It's just the perception of the community and, people in the community. So I think one of the things that we realized is that even though we didn't have everybody on board with the CDC guidelines of, look, you need to wear a mask and your patients need to wear a mask, that after they started to see what was happening in other places in the country and they saw we were really creating as a standard within the company, they got on board. And I feel really good about the support we've gotten from our directors and from the leadership in our company, because they've been the ones that have really carried the flag.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, when we talk about leadership, I'll just say that comes from the top, because if you know, if you set the stage and this is how we're going to deal with this, and you know, you're transparent and you communicate it well and whatever, I think most people would be on board. So I think that's a tribute to your leadership as well. Tell us a little bit, you know, about now, you know, your practice was going really great, and it used to be bigger. You had some contracts, and basically you had to let those go and make a tough decision. Tell us about that tough leadership position that you kind of had to step back a little bit to go forward in the long run.
Yeah, that actually occurred about 6 years ago. We were in a situation where we had the majority of our business was in skilled nursing contracts, and we had a partner that we were in business with that had the majority of those skilled contracts and had the a first right of refusal and a buyout after a period of time that we were in those contracts. And at that point in time, we were about 1,200 employees. So we were covering most of the states in the Western United States, and you know, the company was much larger at that time. What ended up happening is that particular partner wanted to buy us out of those buildings, and we were in a position where it was the right thing for us to do. I think it hurt. We had a lot of infrastructure support that we had to change. You know, when you go from 1,200 employees down to 450 employees, you don't need as big a HR departments. You certainly don't need the, you know, the finance departments and marketing departments that you have with a larger company. So we made adjustments, and there was a year, maybe 2 years, that were really years of correction and trying to get our costs down. And we were concerned that we, you know, would not be able to be successful. But in fact, it was really a good exercise. I think we became very good at looking at costs, at controlling our costs. And as a company, we're much more focused now. The majority of our business is in outpatient. We're focusing, you know, those efforts in a lot of different directions, specifically to outpatient, and it's made a big difference. The other part of it is that we're now, you know, 100% owned by physical therapists, and it was an interesting, you know, period of time when we had investors or partners that were not therapists. There's definitely a difference in the way that we do business and we think than maybe someone that's not a therapist.
So in a moment of leadership crisis, which I think that that qualifies very definitely, one day you wake up and you've, you know, got to reduce your company by a third. By two thirds, excuse me. That's got to be huge. So what did you learn? Did you learn any lessons there that you can use going forward?
Well, first of all, it was certainly all hands on deck. I think the first thing you really learn is what is essential. You know, what do we need to focus on a day-to-day basis that we have to have to be able to be successful? And then what are those things that we can do without? What are those things that we can decrease as far as support or, you know, just things that we learned to be comfortable with? And we went through a lot of exercises. There was a lot of budget meetings and a lot of times where we looked very closely at overhead and tried to make appropriate cuts, but not taking ourselves to a point where we couldn't still deliver good care.
And then the human part of all that had to be extremely difficult. I mean, you're not just dealing with numbers and spreadsheets, you're dealing with people's lives.
Yeah, and I think that for the most part, as we went through those transitions, we tried to give soft landings to people that we were put in a position that we needed to let go. It was over a period of time. Many of those individuals were able to transition and stay with the skilled nursing company, so that worked out in their interest. But there was obviously positions that just went away, And I look back at it now and think that we handled it fairly well.
Yeah, well, that's great. Now, you've had quite a long career, starting in 1984, as you said, and the company's done well, and you've been very active in the private practice section of the American Physical Therapy Association. And I think it was last year, actually, you were awarded the Robert G. Dicus Service Award, which is the highest award that any PT in the nation that's a member of the section can receive. So, first of all, congratulations. That was amazing.
Thank you.
And how did it, how did that feel? How did that, tell me a little bit about when you first heard about it and then in preparing for your remarks at the ceremony.
Well, it was surreal. I think that, you know, being called and when the president of the section let me know that I'd been will be the recipient of that award, I was speechless, and I'm not speechless very often, but I just didn't quite know, you know, what to say. It was incredibly humbling, and I still to this day, you know, feel like, gosh, there's so many more people out there that would be more deserving. But it was truly an honor, and I think especially as someone comes towards the you know, the end of their practice days, and as you move towards you know, looking at retirement, having that kind of an honor and that opportunity was just incredible. I've been very involved with the American Physical Therapy Association and with the private practice section my entire career. So these are my peers, and these are individuals that I, you know, have a significant amount of respect for.
And I know well too that it's a little nerve-wracking to prepare a speech that you're going to deliver in 15 minutes or less and thank all the people you want to thank and say things you want to say. It was not easy, right?
Yeah, that I'm not a public speaker, and that was very nerve-wracking. And but it was also a nice exercise to be able to thank people for you know, their support, and for the people that have really had an impact over my life. And putting that speech together really gave me an opportunity to think about, you know, those people who had really affected my career.
Well, as being one of the probably 1,000+ participants in the audience, you did a fabulous job, and I think it was well received by everybody. So great job on the speech. I think it was done very well.
Thanks, Steve. And obviously, with being in the room with many other people who had received that award, including yourself, joining those ranks was really an honor.
Yeah. You know, speaking of nearing the end of your career now, you're headed towards the retirement years. You've made a decision that it's probably time to start thinking about stepping down. And I believe you've also made a decision to try and come out and land a legacy company. You could have sold it to somebody else. You could have done it differently. But I believe the plans are to hand it down to the next generation. So tell us a little bit about that and how you came to that decision.
Yeah, I think that I've always felt like I wanted this company to continue with private ownership of therapists and be able to have associates who would be able to continue to own and operate the business. I look back at my past, and one of the things that I feel like has made us successful is that I've been able to find people that are smarter than I am and are motivated, and bring them on and have them join me as a partner. And so I've got some really great partners. And I think because of that, it's put me in a position where, as I look at moving into retirement in, you know, the years ahead, that we're in a good position to be able to make that kind of a transition. It's interesting, in our particular industry, there's a lot of venture capital, you know, folks out there, and you know, a lot of companies that would like to be able to come in and purchase a company like ours. But we've really tried to focus on making this an internal event. And so, as we head that direction, I think many of the decisions that we're making today will make that easier in the future.
Yeah, well, it's a really interesting process because there are motivations. There's the pride. There's keeping your group together, and it's said that it's often said it's a bit of a cliche, but everybody you talk to, really talks about their team and how important that was and how important it is, and if you have that good team together, it makes these decisions maybe not any easier, but at least you can go forward feeling good about that decision that you made.
Yeah, and I think what happens is that you feel like if you were to sell out, that in some ways that you would not be would not be being loyal to your company. So it's been something that's always been on my mind, but I feel like where many companies have lacked in having some depth on the bench in leadership, I think we've been in a pretty strong position, and so it will make that decision easier.
So when you look back over your career and you say, gosh, there's a lot of things that have happened. We talked to two big ones, COVID-19, obviously, and then also the loss of the contracts that you had. What do you look back on, and what is probably your biggest challenge or something that you remember as being the biggest test to your leadership and the survival of your company?
Well, I think that absolutely the number one was that event that occurred, started 6 years ago, and that was the transition of moving away from the partnership in skilled nursing. That took every ounce of effort that we could, come up with to be able to work through and to work through, I think, well. I think the other time that was a challenge and difficult was back when the Balanced Budget Act came up, and we moved from salary equivalency to a different reimbursement system, and we had significant layoffs in the skilled nursing area. There was a very large reduction in reimbursement for therapies, and that was a difficult time. And there was probably more professional layoffs that we had at that time in the transition to the Balanced Budget Act than when any other time in our history.
And when you look back over that career as well, what's the moment that you're proudest? When did you feel like, I'm doing my job right and I can feel really good about it?
I have that feeling often, and most of the time it's when we are bringing our leaders together. In fact, last week we had a virtual leadership conference. We had 70 leaders, attending that conference virtually, and I just feel a lot of pride because I look at the depth of our bench. I look at the way that our organization lives by our core values, and I just think that it's been a great ride.
And what is it about your business or about your relationships that attract the kind of people that turn into those kind of leaders? What do you think the key to that success is?
Well, I think that if you were to ask somebody in our company, they would probably say that they feel like they have autonomy, but then they have a lot of support. So it's kind of an oxymoron, but we really try to bring people in that have entrepreneurial spirit, that really have a strong desire to be in an organization that's growing, but then also would like to be able to have the support of, the back office and systems and processes so they can focus on what they really want to do, and that's to be exceptional clinicians.
And what about the future of private practice physical therapy? Are you bullish on it? Are you you think there's a lot of opportunity, or do you think, we should look at things differently as we go forward?
I'm really bullish on it. I believe that we have great opportunities. You look at the aging population, the active aging population, and the advances that we're seeing in, people living longer, joint replacements, all of the things that make it essential for us to be able to be part of the healthcare delivery system. I do believe that we have some challenges, and those challenges, in my mind, come from escalating costs of education and then flattening of, you know, reimbursement. These kids that are coming out of school with these massive student loans just can't live on some of the salaries that are being paid to physical therapists because of our limitations in reimbursement. And hopefully there's going to be something that we can do to help to regulate that.
And you kind of probably can see both sides of that in the sense that you're a business owner, but you also teach in the school at the University of Utah in the physical therapy school. So what can be done? I mean, do you see, it's been talked about for a lot of years, and I'm not sure there's been much movement on it. So do you have any ideas in your circles that you've talked with about what can we do to change that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, Steve. You know, personally, I think one of the things that seems to be getting some traction and that would make a difference is allowing physical therapists to be able to get licensed before they get their doctorate. So they may get licensed as a therapist and be able to have, you know, 1 or 2 years of their education being a therapist and then still advancing in their advanced degree to doctorate.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So let's switch gears here a little bit. I know that outside of your day-to-day that you believe in giving back to your community and also helping those in needs, and you have been working for quite a while in a volunteer organization that helps people in Iraq. So tell us a little bit about that organization and what you're trying to do with that.
Well, about 11 years ago, I started doing some training wheelchair training for an organization called LDS Charities. And LDS Charities provides wheelchairs throughout the world. I think the last count I saw was somewhere in the neighborhood of 650,000 wheelchairs that they've provided since they started the program. What ends up happening is that they have used physical therapists to be able to go out and train individuals to assess people to be fit to a wheelchair. So rather than just bringing a big truckload of wheelchairs and you know, giving it to people, they use the WHO guidelines, which are a person is assessed and fitted for the appropriate chair, and then the appropriate chair is given to that individual and they're trained how to use it. So as a physical therapist, I've been involved in going to countries kind of around the world and doing training for these assessors. Well, about 4 years ago, I was asked to go to Iraq and do one of these trainings in Iraq. And it was actually in northern Iraq in the Kurdish region. And then about a year after that, we had done some training and started bringing wheelchairs in. They asked us to take over that program and actually kind of be the lead what they call a technical specialist in the Middle East region. So we've been involved in doing projects in Iraq and in Jordan. We're looking at trying to start a project currently in Cairo, Egypt. And that's been really rewarding. We've spent a lot of time in the refugee camps in Iraq. I think to this point, we've place somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 or 6,000 wheelchairs in that region, and it's been very rewarding. And my wife has been involved with me in that, and we're just it's something that we look forward to being able to do. We have been currently grounded since March, so all of our efforts are telephonic and over Zoom. But we still have chairs going in. Just last month, we had about 1,000 wheelchairs, you know, go into the region.
Well, before we got locked down, you traveled to Iraq, as you stated. So tell us about the people. What are they like? They see you coming, and what are the personal experiences that you've had with one-on-one with people?
Well, you know, my general feeling is that people all over the world are kind and have good intentions. And I think when I first was asked to go to Iraq, I immediately had concerns about, you know, safety and what that was going to be like. And at that time, they were right in the middle of the war in Mosul, where ISIS had taken over Mosul. And we were working in a location in Erbil, which is, you know, just an hour or so away from Mosul. And so I was quite nervous about that. But what I realized, you know, when we started working in these communities, that these people were great people. They were very motivated. And the organizations that we've worked with that have been able to be the, you know, boots on the ground have just been fantastic. My wife and I have, you know, basically had an interpreter guide that's been with us as we've traveled across the deserts of Iraq. And, you know, sometimes you think about coming over a hill and seeing, you know, somebody that's there to ambush you. But we just never got in that situation.
But you have ridden across the border, I think, from Turkey or somewhere, and gone in a Jeep, and you're out in the middle of nowhere, and I can only imagine the feelings of anxiousness and insecurity in that situation.
Yeah, and I think that the travel in and out is probably the time that I've been the most anxious. The first time we traveled into Iraq, and it was right during the Mosul conflict, the plane came in the dark. They turned all the lights off on the plane, lowered all the windows. It was in the middle of the night, and kind of corkscrewed down. You know, it wasn't a nice long, you know, final approach. It was pretty, pretty rapid and shocking.
Oh,
and
boy.
that made me realize I wasn't in Kansas anymore. This is a new experience, but we've never had, had any issues where we felt like we were in danger.
And what about the recipients of the chairs? Are they appreciative and easy to deal with?
Yeah, it's just been awesome, you know, especially when you go into these refugee camps. These are people that have been driven out of Mosul, in other, you know, cities. You know, many of these people have had wounds and injuries from conflict, amputees from stepping on landmines, spinal cord injuries from gunshot wounds, and to be able to provide these individuals with wheelchairs. And I can, you know, still visualize the people walking or carrying people in on blankets, which is probably the most common way that they transport, you know, disabled people. It's just been really, an overwhelming experience. And I have to tell you, Steve, having my wife Georgia there and having her, you know, be my partner, and I thought it was going to be a little difficult to talk her into going over with me, but she was immediately on board, and she's been a great partner in helping me with this program.
That's wonderful. Have you had the chance to see somebody that's had a chair, perhaps when you come back the next year or the year after that, and how it's changed their lives? Have you had communication with some of those people you've given chairs to earlier?
Yeah, what ends up happening is that each time we go back, we ask to go out on follow-up interviews. So we'll go out and just do some visits of people that have gotten a chair, you know, during the past year or two, and just see how they're doing. And I actually go to their home or, you know, where they live and see how the chair is doing and if it's still meeting their needs. And going into those situations and going into people's homes has been a really interesting experience. And just seeing the difference that having mobility can make in somebody's life. You know, going from a point where they were literally laying on the floor in a house to now being able to go out and to do things and be, you know, part of their community and their neighbors.
So did they look at you at when you first come into that skeptically? Do they, you know, here come these Americans and, you know, you can only imagine, you know, their perspectives of worldviews and so on, or are they just engaging and embrace you and that's not an issue?
Well, we're really behind the curtain. You know, all we do is literally go in and work with a local partner, and the partner's the one that distributes and provides the chairs. They store the chairs. They provide the individuals that we train to be assessors. And so our follow-up is very limited, in our actual time that we spend with recipients. But those that we do get to see, you know, they're very appreciative, and they realize, you know, where these chairs have come from. And these chairs are all, you know, all the money that goes to purchase these chairs is donated. And so it's, you know, it's touching on both sides to know that, you know, people are giving money to be able to purchase these chairs for us to be able to deliver to an organization in these third world countries that will provide the chairs to needy individuals.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great.
And, yeah, it's been great. It's been a great experience.
Yeah, good for you. You know, another thing that I'm aware of is that I believe it's on Christmas Eve. You tend to dress up in a Santa suit and hit the slopes. So how did that get started? Yeah. And that's been going on for a while. I've seen some pretty good pictures of you coming down in some deep pow with that Santa suit on. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I've been doing it for like 18 years now, but I am the official Alta Santa Claus on Christmas Eve, and I only do it once a year, and I, you know, put the suit on, and they kind of give me a few places they want me to visit, and it's just kind of gotten to be a tradition, and so I've enjoyed being able to do that. When you're hiding as Santa Claus, you know, you can your personality changes a little bit, and it's been a lot of fun. The kids, you know, the kids especially. It'll be interesting to see what happens this year.
Yeah,
you
know,
I will have a mask on, so maybe it'll be fine.
Yeah, because you living in Utah, you're an avid skier, and you live what 20 minutes from Alta Slope. And so it's easy to get up there. And I know that some of your ski season last year got cut short. So what is the talk around there? Are they going to open up, do you think, or is it still too early to tell?
Well, it's interesting. We've purchased our season passes, so we're betting on the come. And everything I'm hearing is that they're going to proceed and open. But as we all know, COVID has thrown a lot of curveballs, and there could be changes in the plans, you know, anytime.
What about that area now? I have friends that live in Telluride, and they were saying that this summer it was just packed because everyone was leaving the cities and the quarantined areas and going to the mountains. So have you experienced that in Utah as well?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. We've spent a lot more time outdoors than we have in the past. And even though, you know, we're fairly active outside, I know that the sporting goods stores can't keep fishing poles, on their shelves, that the bike stores can't keep bikes on the shelves, that people are, you know, taking to outdoors. And we see it every time we go into the mountains or to rivers or lakes, you know, a lot more people out recreating.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you're also an avid mountain biker, and you got a new set of wheels. At least you got your bike before the pandemic hit, right?
Yeah, I actually got it on March 7th. So,
wow.
I got it for my birthday, and so it was perfect timing because they, you know, a lot of those bikes are gone now. But my wife and I have, I think that we're up to about 800 miles. You know, since we got those, and those are mountain bikes. So, you know, a lot of those miles are, you know, bumpy mountain, you know, single track.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. So you can do the single tracks and not shy away from those and go for it, huh?
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So looking now at retirement, you know, when that does happen, what do you think you're going to fill your days with? Are you going to stick with the mission work you do with the wheelchairs? Are you going to recreate even more? I know you got a boatload of grandkids. What's in the works?
Well, you know, I think first of all is I look at retirement as a transition. It won't be an event, and so what I think will happen is that I may officially step down in my role, but I'll continue to be participate and be involved with the company. I'll do special projects. You know, I'll be involved with the APTA and the private practice section. I think it's going to give me more time to do some of those things that I've, you know, thoroughly enjoyed. One of our core values at Mount Lanai is have fun. And I actually got the Have Fun Award this leadership meeting, which I've never received anything before. And that truly is probably my my greatest joy is just you know, being involved in activities and doing things. So I anticipate I'm going to be spending a lot more time hiking, biking, a lot more time recreating and being able to focus time with my grandkids and doing some of our charity work.
So how many grandkids do you have?
We have 13 and one on the way.
Okay. And how do you keep track of their names and everything? you gotta be a student of it.
Yeah, that's not a problem with 13. I'm assuming that if you had a lot more that it could get to be difficult, they're all a bundle of energy. So it's lots of fun.
And are most of them local so that you see them a lot?
Yeah, for the most part, they're all kind of, close by. We've got a few that are out of state, but we try to keep in touch with them, using Zoom like we're keeping in touch with just about everybody.
Yeah. Now, I know you've also been a traveler of the world, and you've taken some great exotic and beautiful places, vacations, and that's not happening right now. So you going to be okay without that, or have you got some long-range plans to put together?
Oh, I think that'll be high on the agenda when we get our wings back. Right now it's just been trying to keep close to the barn and doing things. If we're going anyplace, we're doing things remotely. I'm actually doing a wheelchair training right now in Tanzania, but we're doing it via Zoom. So that's been an experience trying to teach mobility wheelchair skills, over a computer and a smartphone.
Wow. So when we think of your travels, what's your most memorable place you've ever been, and what's on the bucket list that you want to make sure you get in?
I think if I were to pick one day that I would love to return, it would probably be a Thailand day with the elephants in an elephant sanctuary. And I know, Steve, you've had an opportunity to do something that as well.
Absolutely.
It was just surreal to, to get these elephants up in the morning and feed them and get ready, and then to get on the elephants and ride them and be able to, take them to a place to bathe. I mean, it was just, it was a really great experience. I would have never thought I would have that kind of an opportunity. So Thailand would be, it's probably high on my list of enjoying. And I hope someday I can go to Africa and be able to do a photo safari. I haven't, I've been to Northern Africa, but I've never been to South Africa. And I think it would be a place I'd love to visit.
Yeah, that's great. And skiing, you're not slowing down on skiing, right?
Even working full time, I try to get in at least 25, 30 days a year, and I can only see that increasing.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So what's one thing that, I've been here before where you always think, oh, when I retire, I'm going to. What is that I'm going to big thing that is out there that you hope you can make happen?
Well, I mean, we laugh about it at home, but I think the first thing I'm going to do is probably clean out a couple of our garages, which, could take at least a month to do a really good job and some of the declutter. But I think that having a little bit more time to be more involved in these areas of service, we'd like to do additional work in this wheelchair area. We feel like we've got the skills and understand the components that are needed, and so being able to grow and maybe do some additional countries. And then I think the other part of it is to just spend more time teaching and working with my grandkids and having those kind of opportunities to do things with them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You just hit a different gear, and I'm how far am I out now? I'm 3.5 years out from when I retired, and I'm still doing other things, as you know. But it's still to sit on the deck in the afternoon and read a book and not feel like you should be doing something else. It's kind of tough to shake sometimes, because it's just like, gosh, you know, you've been so busy and always doing something that you think is making a difference. So to just give yourself that luxury takes some practice. So it's not as easy as you'd think it would be.
Yeah, I think that right now I'm in the gear of talking with people that are retired and trying to go to school on some of their experiences. And, you know, some people say, I've never been so busy, you know, my entire life. And others are saying, gosh, I just, you know, feel like I'm, you know, not able to really get anything done. And so there's a lot of different feelings that people have that have headed that direction. I anticipate that I'm going to continue to stay pretty busy. And I'm also hoping that because I have my love for physical therapy and for our you know, the business, that I'm going to have some opportunities to maybe do some consulting and continuing to work with our company.
Yeah. It's the one thing that I've never understood is that when people say, well, I'm just kind of bored, I can guarantee you that's one thing I'm not, is bored. So it's, but you know, you've got a lot of interests and a lot of skills. And so I think you'll be in high demand. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about you. I think you're going to be okay.
And I'm looking forward to it. I think that it's going to be fun.
Well, Mark, usually at this time of the interview, I always ask my guests, give us a pearl of wisdom. So in relation to leadership, what would your pearl of wisdom be?
You know, I really believe that my focus and my success has always been surrounding myself with really smart, good people. And so my pearl of wisdom would be anytime you feel like you want to try to do something yourself, or you feel like it may be a really tough lift, you know, consider bringing in somebody that can help you. And I'm always surprised how much better I feel having somebody else that's kind of sharing the burden. And sometimes I laugh, you know, with my partners and say, what I really enjoy is knowing that somebody else is worrying at night about the same things I'm worrying about. And so I think that that's my you know, pearl of wisdom is, you know, don't do things on your own. You know, look for people that have similar values and similar drive, and team up.
Yeah, that's great. You know, a lot of people will say, well, what, you know, you've had a great career, and looking from any perspective, you'd say you're very successful. But define success. So, you know, when you leave that office and you kind of start the next phase of your life, how do you define success, and how do you know you reached it?
I mean, to me, success, and especially in success of our business, is its ability to carry on and to have longevity. And I think I've always been proud that we've been able to employ a lot of people and give them opportunities to provide care and enjoy their profession. And I'd like to be able to think that once I retire and move on, that will be able to continue and it can grow. And I think that we've been on a growth track it hasn't been skyrocketing, but we've been very consistent over the years in growing and building the business. And I believe if that continues, that'll be what success looks like.
You know, you bring up a really good point. Probably don't think about it when you're in the midst of it, but when you look back, I mean, think of all the families that you've touched and all the resources you've been able to provide those people, for them to have a happy and fulfilling life. It's kind of heady. You get a big head thinking about it.
It's a good feeling, Steve, but I can tell you, I remember a lot of times where I was anxious and it made me nervous to think of those documents I'd signed, you know, for employment verification and people's house payments and loans that they had, you know, based off of the paychecks that we were providing.
Yeah, that's certainly understandable. Well, Mark, you know, this has been a great discussion. I've really enjoyed hearing about your journey, which has been an amazing one and something to be very proud of. I've had the pleasure of knowing you for many, many years and working side by side with you. And I've always enjoyed your grace of leadership and the respect you have for others. So feel good, man, because you've done it right and you're a great role model for the rest of us. So keep on going. And I'm sure that what's remaining is just going to be even more fulfilling. And I can't wait to see what you do.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. And thanks for allowing me to be on the ranks of the many people you've been able to interview over the years. I mean, this is a great honor.
You're more than welcome. And have a good rest of your day and enjoy the last few days of summer.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right, Mark. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.